Hey everyone, I'm your host Piers Kicks, and welcome back to Metaverse Musings, which is a research-focused podcast that's part of Delphi Digital. We explore the integral components behind what many believe will be the internet's successor, a virtual extension of the natural world where most of us will eventually live, work, and play. To some, it represents our next great milestone as a network species, and to others, it is something to fear. With our guests, we discuss the technology, philosophy, and culture behind this brave new world. If you're not yet subscribed to the Delphi Research Portal, then I fear for your soul. You're missing out on the most incisive analysis that the digital asset space has to offer. Seriously, check it out. Nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. This podcast features sponsors, and any ads are not an endorsement by Delphi Digital and are for informational purposes only. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Metaverse Musings. Today, I am very excited to introduce our guest host joining us as well, Anil here, and Jack, who's got some really exciting ideas around where kind of crypto and NFTs meet the music industry. So guys, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys. Appreciate being here with Pierce. So, you know, basically, Jack Scalone is, been crushing the Twitter threads over the past month. Just give you some context on, you know, how we met. Basically, you know, at Delphi, we're always looking at, you know, everything on crypto Twitter. Jack started tweeting out on, I believe it was March 1st, saying, listen, every day this month, I'm just going to put out a thread on a use case of crypto NFTs meeting music. And, you know, the first few threads were just fantastic. Reached out to him via his DMs, started talking more, and figured that it'd be great to, you know, bring him on the pod. So Jack, would be great to get a little bit of your background, and yeah, welcome to the pod.
Yeah. Pleasure to be on here. Thanks for having me, guys. So I have a kind of formal start in the music business prior to ever getting into crypto. And it was through managing artists and seeing them become more successful that I was turned on to this idea about using cryptocurrency as a way of owning stock in musicians. Because, you know, we all have memories where we're finding artists early on, and that gives us some sort of bragging rights, if you will, of like, you know, hey, I found that artist first. And that was sort of the genesis of the idea. And long story short, the more I flipped over stones, the more I realized that crypto had a lot of intersections with the music business, both how it currently operates, but also what it could potentially help unlock. So it was actually around 2015, right? Committed to fully focusing on this. I was really excited about this technology as a way of changing how licensing works. I'll get into that more if there's interest there on how that works. But basically a smart contract platform, you can imagine, is a very intuitive use case for how digital content gets licensed online. So in 2016, I started working on this. I started working on an open source specification for describing intellectual property rights and persisting them to IPFS. And then in early 2017, after collaborating with Consensus for a while, I joined them officially on their Ujo Music project as a product manager. From there, we built out the first user-generated content platform on Ethereum called Ujo Music. You could set licensing policies on your recordings and on your compositions. You could add different rights holders called, you know, multi-stakeholder music groups, all using smart contracts. But one little thing we did in there that was definitely a kind of auxiliary exploration was release NFTs with every purchase on Ujo. And this was like 2017, 2018 when we were doing this. And it's certainly having a moment now, but at the time it was more, is this patronage? Is it a receipt? Is it the license itself? So long story short, we were thinking a lot about that back then. I ended up doing some other things with Consensus that I can get into a little bit, but I ended up leaving last year to work more directly with creators themselves. I had a relationship with RAC, who's in this space as well. And after talking to the guy, Jacob Horn, behind St. Fame DAO, I was really interested in this idea of having physically redeemable music with tokens on a bonding curve. And that's exactly what St. Fame DAO did. I approached Jacob to talk to him about that. And he's like, hey, hold on, I'm going to be creating a company that does this very thing. We're going to call it Zora. So long story short, in May, we released this cassette tape on Zora. It was the first version of Zora. It's a little bit different than what Zora has emerged into today. And now that tape is going for, it might be like $9,000 today. It was going as much as $12,000 the other day. It's effectively the most expensive cassette tape to ever be sold. And yeah, so that was kind of my re-entrance into the consumer crypto music scene last May. The DeFi summer thing happened. I think that was amazing. It was a lot of experimentation. But now we're in like a full-on NFT mania. And in a lot of ways, it's reminiscent of kind of like the blockchain rush that we had in 2017, at least on the side of creators, in that they recognize this technology as a way of liberation for their industry. And I think we're at a point now where we've reached a new threshold of people that are excited about that. They're more than willing than ever to get something like a wallet to custody their own assets. And I think we're a lot closer to this kind of full vision of what crypto can do for music. So yeah, Neil, as you said, on March 1st, I decided, you know what? I've got all these ideas. I talk about them on calls all the time. And I'm pursuing some of them, but why don't I just start tweeting about this with all this influx of people coming in? They could actually start to, you know, absorb how crypto goes on beyond NFTs.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess, digging in a little deeper there, like Ujo Music, right? You started that, you were working on that in 2015, 2016, just like, going off what you were saying about the current like NFT mania. Pierce just wrote a great note about this for our clients like last month. With this NFT mania right now, we at Delphi, we feel like the core infrastructure pieces have still yet to be built. And I think that's what we're most excited about to invest in, help work on this year, next year, et cetera. Like, walk us through a little bit of your experience with Ujo Music. Like, what were the biggest hurdles and what were the biggest problems that you guys were trying to solve? And then also, like, you know, what was kind of like the goal with, starting that?
Yeah. So quick correction. It's not like really publicly out there. So I wouldn't expect anyone to know this, but I actually joined in 2017, officially joined Consensus. Ujo had started in 2015. There was an early group of people that put it together with an artist, Imogen Heap. She was a Grammy-winning artist. The history here is that in 2015, when Ethereum came out, Joe Lubin, in 2014, prior to that, he recognized that he wanted to invest in and incubate application layer ideas for Ethereum. And he really thought that was the way that Ethereum was going to be successful. At the same time, Spotify had become like this ubiquitous mode of music consumption. And in a way, that was really, really celebrated because it had finally neared the revenue of the music industry, recorded music industry, back towards what it was prior to Napster obliterating it. But at the same time, songwriters on the publishing side were making like squat for their actual royalties. So you had this issue of you used to sell like actual reproductions, actual units of music. You know, if something went platinum, it's because you know how many it sold. Whereas with streaming, now you're actually counting things at the stream level. So how rates are defined by the Copyright Office for what's owed for the mechanical reproduction of a song, effectively a stream, was now being put into perspective for the first time ever, when before it was a much different rate for, say, a digital download or a CD sale. So Adele, Taylor Swift, they were all complaining. Neither of them had their music on Spotify. And this was a very mainstream topic around when Ethereum was coming out. So it was actually a very, very popular use case for Ethereum as a smart contract platform. Say, hey, here's an industry where you have a labor class that's being completely gutted and exploited by a ruling class. Like, all right, that's pretty straightforward. And everyone loves music, so it was sticky and people understood that. So one of the first things Consensus did was explore this idea of a music platform, and that was Ujo. And I should say that Ujo is actually Esperanto for container, which I think is not coincidental to the fact that a lot of people are calling NFTs containers effectively. So it really was this idea of like, you put in a person, policy around works, how they can use it, and then the actual work itself, those three things, that bundle, that's what matters. That's the important thing that we're bringing to the table here. So after 2015, Consensus grew pretty quickly. There was a lot of different areas, everything from energy to health to finance. And the whole Ujo thing was kind of put on the back burner. It was dormant, if you will. And it wasn't really until the end of 2016, after the DAO hack had kind of subsided as like a potential actual threat to the long-term success of Ethereum, did ConsenSys actually start looking at that space again. And that's when I had been collaborating with some folks there already, trying to figure out what Ujo was going to do, what they were going to do with Uport, their identity tool, because I thought that was a value for musicians. That we thought, all right, let's build out a team at ConsenSys for this project, Ujo Music. Let's build a user-generated content platform. And so that's kind of like the history of how Ujo came to be and why it had a place within ConsenSys. And Joe Lubin himself, he identifies the music business. He loves music. So it was kind of like one of his personal projects, if you will. But yeah, I mean, like there was an article that came out in 2017 where myself and one of the co-founders of Ujo, Jesse Grushak, were interviewed. And I remember one of the quotes, it was like fighting tooth and nail with the music business to actually convince them about this technology and what it's powerful for. And this is an issue with really any new technology that has a network proposition or a supply chain proposition to it. Unless all parties are on board, it's effectively then just a redundant system because you still need your bridges to your whatever legacy infrastructure you're using. And that was the absolute biggest bottleneck for the music business. If like we probably could have gone in and bootstrapped a way of financing every single party to migrate into a new system in 2017. But the reality was that money wasn't there to do it. And a lot of these existing parties had existing infrastructure that they were pretty heavily invested into that disincentivized them, if you will, from wanting to adopt new architecture. Nor is the music business historically known for innovating per se. So there's a little bit of like a triage of issues with the music business. It's that you've got the one side is copyright and copyright offices, actual legal national jurisdictions will predicate how music can be licensed in certain contexts. And in some cases, removing all free market negotiating power from certain copyright assets. So like peers, if you and I wanted to, you know, go play a Beatles song at a venue, we don't need to get the Beatles permission to play their song. That would be really, really reductive to the actual spread of culture, and we all probably agree with that. But at the same time, that venue owes the Beatles publishing for the use of that work. So that kind of paints a picture of how smart contracts are not necessarily the best option for bringing all these parties online. Although I think in a future when things are natively online, that'll work. The problem that was probably the biggest though was because as a user-generated platform, which you're afforded DMCA protections, you cannot accept or curate actual content that's uploaded to your platform if you want those protections. This is actually pretty popular now with like the censorship going on. This very legal issue has come up. But basically, at Ujo, we couldn't accept like big artists that were in big record label deals just for the actual like giving us kind of more brand recognition or allowing us to actually grow our demand side because those artists are there. Because we couldn't accommodate the actual ways that they wanted to get paid with the technology that we had built. So for us, it didn't really move the needle on that front. Second was, it was 2017. We told people, hey, you want to register, you have to, you know, get a MetaMask. And we were writing actual metadata to IPFS files that we were actually writing transactions for in our first architecture. So people need a gas just to register, which we like leaned down our architecture over time. But, you know, you tell people, hey, go get MetaMask. Like, all right, I did this. And I'm now using Chrome because I've found out I had to get Chrome too because Safari doesn't work. Like, all right, yeah, sorry, I assumed you're using your Chrome already. It says I need gas. What is that? All right, this is how you get ETH. Like, go to Coinbase or Kraken or something, like, depending on where you are. And then it's like, oh, wait a week to get approved so that you can send it out of that and then to your MetaMask. And like, that was really, really unfamiliar back in the day. Like, you could have gone to any investor and they would have been like, we are not touching this 10-foot pole. This is ridiculously clunky. what's your cost of user acquisition, which is just not a question we could have answered when we're telling people to go through 45 different steps just to get onboarded and actually create a username. So, you know, it was a combination of things. It was a ridiculous UX on the one side, but it was also the industry. And the industry is still very much a problem. And I think that there's going to be a very near future where the NFT kind of rush comes to a head with that legal side of the music business.
Yeah, that's all super interesting. You mentioned obviously bordering on offensive UX back then, but you know, I feel like a lot of those points of friction that you mentioned, those hoops that have to be jumped through, kind of persist to this day, right? So, can you perhaps shed light on how the UX and the kind of platforms looking to accommodate some of these behaviors have evolved, sort of if at all, on that side of things?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's two things. They have evolved on the one hand, but we have a much more familiar public on the other side. So first, the evolution. So Fortmatic came to be, and that was a pretty savvy custodial wallets or non-custodial wallet service that used 2FA, and that was great. Like, we never actually went through with implementing that because we didn't want a wallet migration on Ujo at the time. But that was like a really promising, like, aha for how things could evolve in like 2018. And then fast forward to 2020, Fortmatic actually is now called Magic Wallet, which I'm sure you guys in your audience knows. And we used this with Zora when we launched with REC in May. And the whole Magic experience was incredibly confusing if you are not familiar with crypto. But even worse, if you are familiar with crypto, it was even more confusing. And if you've got people that understand, like, you know, where their actual keys are stored and how they prefer to store them, telling them to like give your email and then they don't actually have custody of that wallet address, although it is reportedly non-custodial, it's just confusing. And then DeFi summer happened. And this for me was an aha because it had zero to do with music. It had zero to do with any like consumer level activity outside of finance. But at the same time, it welcomed in so many people that are now getting wallets, they're getting crypto, they want to play around with these tools, they want to go get yield somewhere. They've gone through all those hoops on their own that there's now enough of like an in-group and an out-group of people where you can very consciously, as a developer or an entrepreneur, design for one of those two cohorts separately. And I still think that if you're not going to do it, the best option is, if you're not going to just optimize purely Web3 for your, you know, Web3 non-custodial experience using, say, MetaMask, Wallet Connect, Rainbow, then just build something that doesn't need it at all, because you either care about those things or you don't. It's not like there's like a gray in between where something like Magic makes sense. So I think we took that step where we found ways to mimic, like, you know, 2FA, and make that the wallet experience. But generally, the closer we've gotten to more people and onboarded to crypto, specifically Ethereum, more of a, what I'm calling a mass threshold audience is how I've been referring it to since DeFi summer. I increasingly believe that the non-custodial wallets like Rainbow are going to be the future, and Wallet Connect are going to be the future, because we're moving towards a world, obviously, where everyone wants to collateralize everything. And in order to do so, you arguably should have these non-custodial wallets. And I used to think it was going to have to be the former, that we were going to have to evolve and develop and the UX is going to have to be improved. But I'm now maintaining that I think that we're just going to see people onboarded into these systems. And I think MetaMask is great and sufficient, but I think it's like the AOL or Netscape of crypto. And I think that we're going to see some really, really cool, fun, and exciting, you know, non-custodial wallets pretty soon. I think we already see them, but they'll start to have social elements to them. And I think it's still going to be just as clunky. You're still going to have to write down your seed phrase, all of that. But at the same time, there's going to be, you know, tens of millions of people that own that experience.
Sure. Yeah. It's something I definitely sort of agree with there. I, for a long time,
echo that sentiment around, you know, UX has to improve so dramatically or whatever. And whilst it does, I also just think that the, you know, average user sophistication will have to go up. Like at some point, everyone's going to have to get a wallet. Obviously, Samsung have made a big push embedding their blockchain wallet, stuff like that. I don't think that this is going to remain some really esoteric niche thing. Like everyone should have a wallet, get a wallet, guys. But yeah, super interesting. I'm curious then around, in terms of like the current state of things. I mean, you've touched upon a few of them, but I guess like as clearly as possible, like what are the most interesting areas of application for crypto around music right now? You mentioned some licensing stuff, obviously creator monetization. If you could, sort of bang those out, it would be great.
Yeah. I mean, like a full stop, NFTs, like everything NFTs, you can do so much of that. It's so malleable as a format, right? Like that's amazing, but it merely scratches the surface. Something that precedes NFTs that I think is like really, really potent and leverages some cool aspects of DeFi is you've got this issue where we don't have on-chain revenue for music, right? That's the constraint. Some revenue is going to remain off-chain. And if you're a purist, that's going to forever be an issue until everyone's reporting information on chain. However, there are ways to leverage elements of using Ethereum today that are actually very advantageous financially, et cetera, for artists. And there's a couple companies doing this. The most recent is a company called Ditto. They're an independent music distributor based out of London. But the OGs that really kind of conceived this idea is a company called Paperchain and another company out of Israel called Revelator. And Paperchain, they basically came up with this idea of like, you know, Spotify will tell you how much you've been played. And I could tell you how much you've been paid historically for your plays. So let's say you get 500,000 streams on Spotify every month and you get a $3,000 check every 3 months, basically you get $1,000 for every 500,000 streams. So let's just use that for the sake of math. But the caveat is Spotify, or the time that comes through the pipeline, you're not getting paid but once every 3 months. That's how delayed the payments are. But the usage of those streams, that data is provided via live API daily. So what if we could actually have a distributor that has that access to that first party API data of how much your content is being streamed? And then we collateralize those actual reports and we mint stable coins. So now these usage reports are collateralizing the minting of stable coins that we're then just charging you an interest on for giving you basically a loan for the payment that we'll then collect in 3 months, because that money has to go to the distributor anyway. So as a distributor, I have this catalog. I've got a shit ton of artists during COVID that are no longer making money off of live performance revenue, and they want to tap into some of their streaming revenue. And now, you know, they need to pay rent now. They had shows canceled. They need money quickly. So they take actual DAI out as a loan, and then they convert the DAI into USDC or whatever they need for their equivalents to pay in fiat for whatever it is that they need. And then they pay like a 5% interest rate after 3 months, and that just comes directly out of the payment they get. And usually there's like a, and this gets more into the actual math, and this is per company, but they have some sort of like discrepancy margin where if the effective rate is wrong, they can charge you out of that too. So that's a really, really unique example. It's not a purist play. It's not fully decentralized. That goes without saying, but it leverages DeFi. It leverages, you know, the minting of stable coins and cheap loans really quickly for artists. And Paperchain is doing this, and you know, I could be wrong, but I think their strong suit is really in honing in how they score that data for the effect of giving loans. Basically, they're like a ratings agency on, hey, this artist like very consistently makes this. We can attest to that. That way we'll rate this loan very high. And they've done a really good job like honing in their math on that front. But they use Centrifuge's Tin Lake to do that collateralization element. So, I mean, like that's a brilliant use case right there. You don't really need to build much software. You just need access to that data. Boom, you're using Ethereum. Your users have wallets. That's great. On the other hand, a company called Revelator in Israel, they built out their own wallet that's non-custodial, and it's for artists to own this experience on themselves. And then they could actually redeploy some of that cash for the purpose of marketing. Say, hey, I actually did really well in Germany last month. Let's like let's run a campaign in Germany to try and drive more streams with those actual advances. They can choose to redeploy that for marketing. And that's kind of like a cool little accessory. But a company called Ditto, which is actually Music Business First, not crypto, they're doing this now in London. I don't know much information about what they're doing beyond them announcing that they're going to enter into this market. Those are all like three, those are three of the same thing, but that's like one very real example that crypto Twitter has no idea exists. These people are just using this for what it's great for right now. They're not promising anything else down the road, but each one of those companies has some really exciting ideas in their back pocket about where those things can evolve towards.
Nice. Yeah, no, that actually sounds really interesting. I guess, you know, in one of your earlier threads, I know you started off, and I know you're going to get to the juicy part, you know, end of month. You've been teasing that, you know, the threads at the end are going to be kind of the best. But, you know, some kind of basic ideas that you kind of threw out here that obviously make a lot of sense, like payment splits, tipping artists, like how have you seen these kind of evolved, and have you seen these in practice yet? Or, you know, kind of talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I want to say that, like, so the idea with the 31 days is a lot of ideas rely on other existing ideas. So there's going to be some where I'm like basically just combining five things at the end of the month. So we're like, this is how this
Definitely,
is possible.
Yeah.
It also goes without saying, I mean, you guys get this, but, you know, maybe some of the audience that are reading my tweets don't, that like all these things, like, you know, you can NFT things all the way down. You could DAO things all the way down. Like, you know, this applies to this, but this can apply to anything. And, you know, I kind of want to display that ecosystem for all that it's worth, rather than, you know, have people have these single access entry points. That is all they understand. That being said, you know, one of my single point of entry was smart contracts for royalty payments. Like, it's so intuitively understood. But the nature is that licensing is actually much, much more complex than that. And it challenges how you actually structure the architecture for storing any rights information, so that you could isolate certain properties of it for the purpose of licensing certain parts of it. So for example, you know, a single song is actually two forms of copyright. You need different kinds of permissions on both sides of the copyright. You need, you know, you're going to be paying different rates for each, and depending on the licensing type, it's a very different, you know, negotiation process and how it's going to work. So this idea of like programmatic licensing everything is great, but the challenges right now are mobilizing the actual copyrights and the actual rights in a way that they're content addressable, so that they're compatible with things like smart contracts, and that maybe they're underwritten as tokens to really truly make them mobile. And that's kind of the different thinking or line of thinking that I've had. Is like, at first it was like, how does this world of decentralized systems apply to the world of music, and how can it help reduce friction and, you know, increase marketing opportunities, the market opportunities within licensing? Now, my whole mode of thinking has shifted to, if this is all applied, and let's just assume that, you know, the architecture side's figured out, what new opportunities does that really unravel and make possible? And there's like no shortage of places that I look where I'm like, whoa, that's really potent down there. So the music business today, historically, like the way that they store songs themselves, the files, the rights information, is all incredibly fragmented and like even archaic at times, like literally on paper. Not mostly, but a lot of it is. And distributors do a lot of the actual work, not the actual people that own these assets. So it's a whole misalignment of incentives to adapt and change. And I think one, curation is going to disrupt it. It always does, just like Napster did, just like iTunes did, just like, you know, SoundCloud and streaming and Grooveshark and now Spotify did. The mode of consumption always leads and then everything else follows. So now I'm thinking, okay, what if we're not using smart contracts, but we're using tokens? What if, you know, what is the correct architecture? And that's still, that jury is still out. I don't know the answer to what a, you know, fully programmatic licensing world looks like. I could give you within a certain vertical and context an idea of how it could look, but now it's everyone's doing their own thing with this. It's not like there's a, you know, people are entering into crypto via this. People are trying everything with music, and that's what's really exciting. So yeah, if an NFT is an actual underlying composition, and an NFT is an actual underlying recording, and then there's an NFT that's the actual distributed unit of a song, then that allows the same flexibility you would need for, you know, treating rights in a content addressable way to create smart contracts for each licensing type. So there's multiple ways to do it. I'm not sure what's really going to reign supreme.
I think, like, you know, what you were touching on there is exactly what I wanted to harp into, where, like, I like that you mentioned curation as part of the answer here too, because, like, I feel like the main hurdle I see is really just, like, for this revolution to really get underway is just that the, you know, motivations of the people who currently incubate and, you know, own these royalties and, you know, all these middlemen, like, what are their incentives to automate this away, right? I guess what you're saying is the curation will help it kind of go around, where, you know, you have the supply side as far as, like, the artist, and then the demand side, the fans getting, like, a direct interaction with the artist, connection to that artist is, like, the way this happens. But, like, you know, you obviously have way more experience here. Like, I feel like this is why the music industry, you know, and even traditional, like, finance, right, has been such a big, they have these giant moats around it because they just aren't incentivized to change. Like, do you see this changing anytime soon, or you think it's just like a revolution that kind of comes from under?
I think the NFT thing might disrupt it, just based on some conversations I've had over the past few weeks, and a combination of that and, like, COVID decimating live revenue, live performance revenue. I think the NFTs now actually have, like, a strong chance to force the hand of how people think about this. But I still think it's going to be some startup that releases music in a new, unique way that makes artists say, I'm going to do this and not that anymore. And it's actually right on time. So, I don't know the answer. I think it's going to come from underneath. I think it's going to be, you know, a disruption of how consumption works, therefore curation. I would bet my money there. I don't know who it's going to be. I know that the industry will have a kind of, like, a whiplash reaction to it, as historically they always do, because this is how it's gone. I mean, we had, you know, MTV came out in the 80s, as tapes did, and, you know, they were popular. Then CDs came about. Then it was MP3s for a decade. Then it was streaming for a decade. Well, now we're in a new decade. What is it going to be? And, like, I would have liked to have told you 3-5 years ago, it's going to be crypto, but now it might even be more specific than that. And it might be tokens. It might be tokens as licenses, tokens as an induction of actual scarcity. And I the most exciting thing I can tell you is that of all the different circles I've run around trying to figure out what the go-to-market is for having the big effect that crypto should have on the music business, the thing I'm most excited about is the induction of scarcity using tokens. And because the metaphor I give is that music going on Spotify is like going to a buffet restaurant. Like, you just give them $10 and you can literally eat whatever you want, however much you want it. Like, you might go there and pay $10 and eat, like, a very small thing. You might also go there and eat, like, half the tray of your favorite thing plus, like, five other things. And, you know, it doesn't matter. There's unlimited quantities of it. That sucks, right? Like, you know, obviously buffets are not the best kinds of restaurants. They're great for what they are. But music is currently only being served out at buffets. And that's kind of shitty, I think, for both, obviously, the people cooking it, but, you know, also fans. I think we're in, like, an epidemic. This actually doesn't really fly anymore in a post-COVID world, but I used to say we're in an epidemic of cultural discovery on music, because it's really a tragedy how music discovery works today. Like, you and I, you know, the three of us probably listen to the same music, but we've all found it on, like, different Spotify playlists, nor do we really care that we all listen to the same music, or why do we listen to the same music. So that to me I think the weak point that like all the other non-sexy licensing is broken, royalties aren't high enough, all those other issues are like potent, but they're not, they don't have mass appeal to them. I think the issue with cultural discovery of music does, and I think that's what's going to change how we release music. And I think it's going to be through scarcity. I think we're going to induce scarcity, and we're going to charge for music differently because we're going to have price elasticity on the amount available. And I think it's going to be a cool new way. I just don't know what it looks like. I am working on that though.
I'm super interested to see what the kind of consumption interface looks in that. Yes. Media player built into your wallet that you know can sort of think about. I'm curious what you think is sort of the primary path to adoption for this stuff. You mentioned there's a number of outstanding frictions. I wonder like what you think the tipping point is and where this really you know makes its way into the music industry.
So on the one hand, I could argue that like we've already seen that with Audius. Because I don't know. I mean, I think the last time I think I checked, it was like over 3 million, or it might be over like 5 million for that matter, actual users they have on Audius right now. I'm like, to me, that's like this next SoundCloud. And I think that, you know, in a way, you could say that that is the music industry moving into crypto. That is a, like, you know, millions of users, that's something. And they've got a really, really robust roadmap where you could do things like, you know, what you're talking about, where a media player can only be enabled if you're holding a token, or, you know, if you actually have purchased or accessed a certain link or a CID that's somewhere. That's really interesting. But yeah, when does the licensing happen? When does a musician say, I want to release a song? Rather than release it directly to my fans and get paid whatever the copyright office says they're worth, I'm going to sell 1,000 access tokens. And rather than sell those 1,000 access tokens directly to fans, I'm just going to let market makers decide what they're worth. And they're going to assume whatever the value they have in the market, and they want to, you know, give me a payment right now. So the way music licensing works today, as you guys are probably familiar, is labels give, you know, an artist a big advance, tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands, maybe in, you know, on the high end for an album deal. Sometimes it's multiple album deals, but they buy the copyright. They actually control what you can do with that music. So you don't actually own that music anymore, those recordings. And in some cases, they will buy out the publishing, the actual songwriting too. And that's, it's worked, it's built the music business as we know it, but it's pretty exploitative today. And in the future, what if you could just sell the actual revenue, like it's an actual futures contract on that song, almost as if it was a commodity, as opposed to selling the underlying rights to distribute it. So like peers, I could sell you one of my songs that you get to have exclusive distribution rights to Audius for. And for the next 6 months, any revenue that song makes off of Audius, you own that. I sold that to you. So I'm more interested in how do we use crypto now to actually sell out things like time, access, actual streams, rather than the underlying rights themselves. Because that's another kind of area of crypto that I think is really potently available today. It's not being leveraged by anyone. It doesn't need to be fully decentralized. It just takes advantage of the certain financial properties that are advantageous here.
Yeah, I love that. I think, you know, going off that, I actually had a couple of exercises because I feel like there's, you can do so much with crypto, right? Like obviously easy utility is like, if I'm early to an artist and buy or help fund the first like, you know, mixtape or album, then I can get, you know, first row seats at a discount when, you know, this artist blows up a decade from now or something like that. But I'd love to kind of hear your perspective on, this is kind of like a three-part question. So, you know, feel free to answer this any way you like. But, you know, if you take an artist, like an industry-leading artist, like a Drake or Ariana Grande, like what's the most impactful thing they could do right now where you know, they could help move the music industry, you know, a lot quicker than, you know, most other artists. What's the most impactful thing they could do leveraging kind of NFTs and what's currently in the space? Then on the other side, what about like an artist that has, you know, close to zero following, like just their mom and families listening to them? Like, what could they do to leverage NFTs to get more distribution, get more exposure, and, you know, potentially make more money without selling their soul to, you know, a label?
Yeah. So I don't know if this is something you'll be satisfied with, but the answer I'm going to have for both, is the same. There's differences within each, but a few years ago, if you were asking how to get in crypto as an artist, you'd be like, oh, you could use Ujo, but there's not a lot built out right now. We don't have that issue anymore. There's certainly a learning curve, but right now I emphasize that any artist needs a plan. You know, like you could get into crypto, but I actually used this one of my tweet threads the other day. Like NFTs are great because, you know, artists are under the assumption that they're now taking control of selling their work directly. That's amazing. Like the fact that that didn't really exist for every vertical in a ubiquitous way. That is obviously a very, very big innovation, in a global context too, but that is actually creating some sort of future history of the relationships you will have with all of your fans. So, you know, we all followed artists on MySpace. We did the same thing on YouTube, SoundCloud. We looked at Hype Machine. You know, we created catalogs of music on iTunes. You know, maybe bought some stuff on Bandcamp over the years. We used Apple Music. We, you know, downloaded Tidal once to listen to an album. Now we have Spotify for basically everything else. And like all these platforms keep fucking going down. And our relationships with those artists and our relationships with that music, our licenses to those that music goes away with it. And NFTs, in a way, are permanent in that regard. Like, okay, I get that some of the actual media assets are stored in centralized places that may very well be gone in 10 years. But if that artist still has control of that wallet address, or even if they don't, they could look at all the transaction history on it, and they could then have an addressable way of saying, anyone with these wallet addresses that participated with me, like, come join this Discord. And I don't think it'll be Discord in 10 years, but these are permanent relationships, and that's really exciting. So for the two different artists, it's have a plan. You don't need an Ujo Music to get into the space now. You can own your own brand using all of the tools available, and it's the sky's the limit for what's up to you. And I got to plug this, because if it was Drake, I would say a social token, but I would say a very deliberate, very controlled social token. I don't want people just coming in and buying up fucking Drake coin because it's Drake coin. I want people buying tokens or earning tokens because there's some actual redeemable experience on the other side. These token activations, as I call them. That would be cool. Then having some long-term plan for that, like let's do live shows that are or live streams that are shows where only token holders can go. And, you know, we stratify engagement or, you know, how much they can interact based on how many tokens they hold. Actually having some sort of like policy or monetary strategy or treasury strategy around the tokens and how Drake wants to use them to his own advantage. Are people spending them? Or are they just holding them? What happens when they spend them? Do they burn them? It's like, what are those mechanics? Those are not concepts that you need, like, you don't need an expert into how, like, you don't need, you know, someone to actually write Solidity contracts for you to tell you how you want to manage a treasury of, you know, a fan club currency, if you will. And within that context, obviously, release some NFTs. Make them approachable for everyone, make them affordable. You know, maybe have some big, you know, big ones that are like limited edition where, you know, you can make money off them and, you know, have some flashy ones. But it's a combination of all these things. And then like use Audius, release some music there and like just really, really like kind of seep into the system if you're an artist. Now, I am working with a no-name artist. They actually just rebranded from Torrential to Arc. Very, very talented hip-hop artist from Hawaii. And I talk a lot about social tokens and the success that some artists have had, releasing them, like Portugal the Man on Rally. RAC obviously, you know, is really, really acclaimed for this. But can we actually use these same tools to build a following for this artist? So I'm working on that right now. I actually just released Arc ARK on Rally. This is this artist. He has an amazing management team behind him. And yeah, for the next few years, like, we're just going to see how we can use an actual social token to be an activating force around his engagement. And I think, you know, we're really talking about like a metaverse experience here. This guy's not doing live shows. He's not, he's not meeting with anybody. So this token's really this kind of like this thing that like links everything together underneath, because he does Zoom calls with some fans. They like smoke weed on like Wednesdays together. he he'll do like cooking shows. So we're like, just put it on Discord and we can make a token like be a driving factor for all of this. And then like pre-save a song on Spotify that's coming out, and we'll just throw tokens at people for doing that. And then they'll be like, oh, we need to be more involved and more engaged. So we're really gamifying the involvement around an artist. But hopefully this circles back to this very genesis of what got me into this, is can you own some of that upside in finding an artist early? And that's the kind of full circle that I think we've come, that it's really exciting now to see the whole ecosystem of opportunities that can supplement an artist's career here.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think, our team at Delphi, we're so obsessed with crypto as far as like what it unlocks as far as like power communities, right? And music, obviously, you know, you have Yeezy, you have, I think like Charlie XCX, created an album like live during the pandemic with kind of her fans. You could totally see these tokens kind of be applied at that. I think what's really interesting as well is like almost when those incentives are aligned, I think I'm really interested to see how this ARK token works, because you could see that community almost help this artist kind of rise, from the ashes to become, a household name pretty quickly, helping him get placements and commercials, things like this. That's really cool. That's interesting.
Yeah. We've seen some success with other social tokens because they have a presence in the crypto space. I have a lot of hypotheses I'm running with ARK right now of like, will we see the same success if they are not present at all in the crypto space? And if there are nobody, and how can we actually use these tools for the values that we're describing them as, and remove the variables that I think are actually influencing things negatively or distorting them in a way from creating a value proposition out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all super fascinating, and enjoyed those sort of looking down the line a bit use cases you touched upon there of where some of this stuff could go as well. I'm curious, given, it clearly shows how much time and thought you've kind of put into this intersection here. I'm curious if there's one thing that you know now that you could have known when you started out on your crypto journey, as it pertains to, music and NFTs and crypto, what would it be?
Well, I mean, for one, we released the first music NFT in late 2017 with an artist called Giraffage. We did an ERC-20 token prior to that with RAC, because 721s didn't even exist then. I think it would have just been more faith in myself, in the different ideas that I had. I think for better or for worse, and I don't know if this will be realized in the next year even, as a small team, we spent so much time hopping from idea to idea to idea to idea and writing about it and putting it out there. And it's been really nice to see those ideas adopted and really take off. But at the same time, had we just stuck with one and we were like still standing up today, we would be certainly having a moment. However, I'm not in any way kind of like wishing that we had made Ujo be this thing that was really reaping the benefits right now of the market. But at the same time, I do wish I had more faith in the ideas that I had. I think both DeFi summer and seeing people jump into crypto, but also now and with the NFT thing, it's given me a lot more kind of reassurance and validation of some of the thinking we did. And if I were to extrapolate that out, I think we're going to have a really, really exciting next few years.
We love to hear it. Neil, I'm not sure if you had any other questions you wanted to address. I'm mindful on time, but Jack, for those listening, really appreciate you coming on. It's been super interesting to learn about all of this. For those listening, where can they find you to follow along with, you know, your thought and how it's evolving and any projects you might be dipping into?
Yeah, so I am not talking about the exciting companies that I'm working on right now. Namely, there's one of them because they're not out there yet. But if you follow me on Twitter at Jack Spallone, you'll hear all about it there. I feel like I'm kind of, my joke is that I'm a musician's command line interface for crypto. So if you're a musician, I would absolutely love to talk to you about any idea you have under the sun about how this space could help you out.
Awesome. Yeah, no, appreciate the time, Jack. And yeah, definitely give him a follow. We'll put the, you know, his Twitter link in the bio and the show notes. But yeah, appreciate the time, man. I could talk about this for hours. So we'll definitely have you on soon.
Thanks a lot, Jack. Really appreciate you coming on.
Appreciate it, guys.
Bye, guys.